From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the third day of December 2018. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and the impact of the Trump-Xi trade talks that took place over the weekend. We'll do that with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and discuss the cash grain market, too, with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. As we wrap up our time together, we'll discuss the agricultural news and take a look at the weather forecast. Mark Russo will be here from Risk Pulse in Chicago on this Monday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Monday afternoon, we're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to take a look at what's been happening in the commodity markets. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. What a weekend we had, and a lot to report on today, I think.
Boy, it was all hands on deck in the evening trade. Market was quite a bit higher right out of the chute on the evening trade at 7-8 p.m. last night, and Mark was able to, you know, hang in there and trade higher most of the session. As everyone well knows, we've got a trade truce taking place at the present time. A lot of speculation that there could be some significant soybean or ag product purchases, but the trade was a little leery on that as we went through the session on nothing really developing in the cash market as of yet. Also, when you look at the price action today, you even look at the hog futures in general, they ended up lower, and that was probably high on the list of an ag product that would be purchased. So need to actually see confirmation of a little bit of lowering of the tariff, and plus, two, the Chinese buyers in general probably will not chase a rising market, as they will probably be patient here and see how things unfold and try to get some better buys as we get a little deeper into this process here, Todd.
Do you think farmers were positioned last night to take advantage of some cash sales potentially, and if not, should they go ahead and pull the trigger this afternoon?
A few were. We had some resting orders above the marketplace to take advantage of something like this. As far as a hedge goes, we were fairly active last night and this morning on selling, hedging, buying puts, or whatever kind of protect our downside for the most part. But the market goes on down, be enough sold, of course, but it's an opportunity to play catch up. Kind of fits the time window in general. We were looking for some strength going into mid-December. I guess you can maybe call this a Santa Claus rally. I don't know if you want to call it a Trump rally. I'd just call it a Santa Claus rally here as we move in to December. As far as making sales here, yes, by all means, if you need to make some catch-up sales, you got to kind of scale in over time. Because the fear would be, basically, as any negotiation go, as you work back and forth, there's up positive emotions, and then there's always something that comes up that's negative. So if we, say, hold here for a few days and all of a sudden we receive some negative news, we could easily give back, 20, 30 cents in beans, 10, 15 cents in corn if verbal commitments don't hold true.
With volatility, though, always comes opportunity, and producers can be ready for some of that, I take it.
Yeah, as far as volatility, ups and downs, use the ups to sell the cash. If you want to re-own it, use the downs to buy it back. Volatility in the options went down today. There's a lot of buying of calls, buying of puts ahead of the weekend when ideas, either some bullish or bearish news will come forward here. Now we kind of know what took place. Option values did come down quite a bit today. So if you're one wanting to buy some insurance for some moves later on, now's the time to look at it here over the next week or two.
Next week, USDA will update its world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Any indication or reason, I suppose, given what happened over the weekend, for USDA just on that to change what their demand usage might be? I suspect that won't be the case, but you might have a different opinion.
No, we feel that it's too early to adjust those numbers. We need some actual sales to take place to change the numbers. If we do see some sales take place, some of the cash green guys are looking at an increase of possibly, if we can do it right away, possibly seeing 180 to 200 million bushels of beans going to Asia. If that's the case, you take the 900 million bushel carry out, subtract 200 million, we're still at 700 million bushel carry out. But the window of opportunity is going to be closing fairly quickly here if we don't get something going here by the first part of February.
Did I see that the Chinese have been into the pork market? How good a sign is that for them?
Yes, so on the weekly export sales report, that did show up. There was a blip back up. And, you know, that's kind of a main commodity here that they would be interested in. And if we could see a continuation of that, I think that's a positive. They continue to fight this African swine fever. You know, it's a major concern. And if the overall public needs some protein source, pork will be one of them.
Anything else that we need to talk about as we look forward for the rest of the week?
Well, technically here, you need to watch the market here in the next day or two. We did have a gap higher on the price charts. We got the market in position here. We do not want the market to gap back lower by all means, so we need to maintain these price gains that we've seen. If we fail to hold these price gains, I'd be a little concerned that we might have seen a little bit of an early top here.
Yeah, so the important part would be if we do go lower, to go ahead and fill the gap as opposed to gap lower, which would leave an island top, and those are much harder to take out.
Exactly.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, a flurry of activity over the last week could bode well for agriculture. Over the weekend, President Trump met on the sidelines of the G20 summit with China, which has since agreed to purchase more U.S. ag products. Trump also agreed to not increase tariffs on China in January. Meanwhile, following the signing of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Trade Agreement, or USMCA, Trump said he wants to terminate the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, in 6 months, which would be replaced by the USMCA. The move to terminate NAFTA is an effort to pressure the next Congress to approve the USMCA. Lawmakers could also soon take up the Farm Bill, which some thought could come this week, though the schedule of Congress is muddled by the passing of President George H.W. Bush, who will lie in state in the U.S. Capitol Rotunda for a portion of this week. Mr. Trump also says he may be willing to allow an extension to appropriations bills that are needed by Friday, which include funding to the Agriculture Department because of the expected limited schedule this week for Congress. All this comes as fresh farm economic forecast predicts that farm income could drop another 12% in 2019. By the way, here's how agricultural groups are responding to the signing of NAFTA's replacement, the USMCA. Kevin Kester, the president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, says U.S. beef producers are one step closer to unrestricted science-based trade continuing in North America. Kester says the agreement brings the trading relationship with U.S. neighbors into the 21st century. The National Association of Wheat Growers and U.S. Wheat Associates say this is good news for wheat producers. Most notably, the USMCA gives tariff-free access to imported U.S. wheat for longtime flour milling customers in Mexico. And Senate Ag Committee Chairman Pat Roberts says the signing marks an important step towards Congress considering the new agreement, which he's looking forward to in the new year. U.S. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue says the agreement secures greater access to the Mexican and Canadian markets and lowered barriers for many American products. At the other end of the spectrum, the National Farmers Union says the USMCA does make important improvements over NAFTA. However, it doesn't go far enough to institute a fair trade framework that benefits family farmers and ranchers and restores U.S. sovereignty. NFU President Roger Johnson wants changes before Congress ratifies the agreement. We'll stay in Washington for the moment, where the Environmental Protection Agency last week released its final rule for biofuel volumes in the nation's fuel supply. But the controversy continues over the future of oil refinery waivers and remaining biofuels targets under the Renewable Fuel Standard. EPA boosted the final RFS volume slightly from its earlier proposal to nearly 20 billion gallons next year, including up to 15 billion gallons of mostly corn ethanol, nearly 5 billion gallons of advanced biofuel, over 2 billion biodiesel and 418 million cellulosic gallons, and all told, a 3% increase from this current year, or 2018. But a bigger concern for the biofuels groups, like the Renewable Fuels Association, are the hardship waivers used for oil refiners. That's according to the president of the Renewable Fuels Association, Jeff Cooper.
In their own documents, in their own deliberative process and drafting of this rule, they show that they can, and not only can they do this, that they should do it in order to observe the spirit and intent of the law.
And here's how Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley sees it.
What's most important isn't so much the announced levels as what actually ends up being the real levels.
Grassley has been the defining voice for the RFS in the Senate. The biofuels industry is also concerned about reports EPA will slash volumes the last 3 years of the RFS to match current industry output, a move that would erase any relief, even if EPA did make up volumes lost to the waivers. Finally today, last week Tuesday, an 11-year-old Northern Illinois boy just couldn't resist finding out whether or not your tongue really sticks to a frozen metal pole. Spencer Klein of Sandwich did the deed, and indeed his tongue stuck. Spencer was with a friend at the time who called for help. Apparently, it hurts a lot when you get your tongue stuck on a frozen pole. Spencer was able to free himself before emergency help arrived. The boy says he was inspired by the scene in A Christmas Story. Speaking of which, the boy who played Flick in that scene is all grown up now, and he'll be talking about it at the Hollywood Boulevard Cinema this coming Saturday in Woodridge, Illinois. That's a Chicago suburb east of Naperville. Scott Schwartz will be on hand in the lobby from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday. That might be worth the trip. Just look for the leg lamp. That's today's Ag News. I'm Todd Gleason. Well, as you've already heard, over the weekend, President Donald Trump negotiated trade and other issues with the president of China. Peter Navarro was in the room and spoke on NPR's Morning Edition today. Navarro is the director of the White House Trade Council. He told NPR President Trump wants, at the end of 90 days, verifiable structural changes in the way China does business, especially as it relates to intellectual property. Here's how Navarro explains what happened during the 2.5-hour-long meeting.
So here's how the dinner went. The first 30 minutes of that dinner were primarily the Chinese president, Xi Jinping, who was the only one who spoke at that dinner for the Chinese side, laying out chapter and verse all of the things that they promised to do, not just with respect to buying more stuff, which is small in the scheme of things, but very important for our farmers, but dealing with the structural changes, dealing with the forced technology, dealing with the cyber theft, dealing with the lack of market access. So it's not surprising that in the wake of this, there might be a different message coming out of the Chinese media. That's what they do. But at the end of the day, the understanding coming out of that room was very clear. 90 days. At the end of the 90 days, we have actual structural changes that will yield actual immediate verifiable results.
And the penalty for not meeting these verifiable results at the end of 90 days, says Navarro, was clearly stated during the meeting, too.
Tariffs go up to 25%.
The current U.S. tariff on products imported from China is 10%. Navarro, at the end of the conversation with NPR, said the administration has given nothing away in allowing China 90 more days to, quote, do the right thing, unquote. If they don't, Peter Navarro says, they'll be held accountable. Ryan Stark, of course, is with the Andersons, and they've had a really busy afternoon there. Brian, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good.
Oh, you guys are busy. It's rare that everybody is on the line when I give you a call there.
Yeah, no, it's been a busy Monday for sure.
So is everybody calling in and saying, Do you think it's going to keep going, or are they actually making sales?
Yeah. No, they're making some sales, too. They're making some sales, but they're also asking the first question, is it going to keep going? So I think that's the universal question, and I guess we'll find out more as we move forward. Obviously, somewhat positive news, but a lot of ambiguous dialogue, too, to quantify what it absolutely means.
Yeah, I was following Chris Clayton from DTN. He just posted on Twitter that DTN seminar they've got going on, and it looked to me as if the secretary skipped from the weekend news right into we should be using smaller markets, but didn't give any account of what might be purchased or what that product mix. So there's just a lot of moving parts. And I suppose you're of a mind, as most of the analysts, take advantage of what you know and set yourself up to cover what you don't know. Is that right?
That's exactly right. I think, obviously, the bean market last night was a primary example. You open 28 higher, 25 higher, and we sell off after the initial enthusiasm wears off. And I think the key for the producer is to put in open offers and pick a price point you're content with, because you never know what might happen.
Is corn a different beast in this process, in your opinion?
It is. I think right now, believe it or not, until we get closer to the spring or even to the February-March timeframe when we're talking more seriously about acres, the bean story kind of trumps that. And I think ultimately corn is a follower for the time being. And I think it's still going to be range-bound. And I think ultimately there's going to be some opportunities to price towards the upper end of the range that we've been in the last 30 to 60 days. And the producer probably needs to take advantage of that. But it's certainly all about beans for the time being.
Back to the beans then. Does this gap higher scare you at all?
Well, I think it certainly does from a technical standpoint. Anytime you have a gap and then you close, you know, somewhat soft compared to how we opened last night, there's always pause to, okay, are we going to backfill and fill that gap? Gaps are meant to be filled at some point in time. I think there's enough positive news that the trade probably will take a step back and say, okay, let's wait and see what the definitive is. But it could be a case of buy the rumor, sell the fact. I mean, you look at the carryout projected to be 900 million, maybe even a billion bushels. And if China, we do work out a trade agreement and you get another 250 million, maybe 300 million bushels of export demand, you still got a pretty hefty carryout. So it's not just a product of the tariffs. It's a product of the fact we had a pretty good sized bean crop, and the fact that we're in a growing supply base, it's going to cap some rally potential here moving forward. So it goes back to my point earlier that the producer really needs to take advantage of big surges like that by having offers in place ahead of time.
Hey, thanks so much, Brian.
Thank you, Todd.
Brian Stark is with the Andersons, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon. Mark Russo is now here. Let's start in South America. Conditions, I take it, remain favorable across much of that continent.
Yeah, they certainly do, Todd. We've seen favorable weather now, especially over the past few weeks, as Argentina has improved from a dryness standpoint. Even going back over a month ago, the dryness wasn't even any real concern. But over the past few weeks, we've seen active conditions both in Argentina and Brazil, and that's helped to provide overall adequate to abundant soil moisture reserves. And looking ahead here throughout the early to middle part of December, we see a continuation of favorable weather. Now, Argentina and southern Brazil will be on the dry side this week, but that doesn't look to last very long. In fact, we see rains returning next week, and they look like widespread rains to help maintain these current adequate to abundant soil moisture reserves. Additionally, no sign of any heat developing. So, yeah, it looks really good in South America until further notice.
How's it look in the United States?
Across the U.S. here, we are, after this kind of brief weekend warm-up, we are going to see temperatures kind of back in the deep freeze over the next 8-9 days. Temperatures do not look quite as cold as what we've seen with our Arctic blast here in recent weeks, but nonetheless, it's a colder than normal pattern for the next 8-9 days. After that, we do see temperatures warming up. In fact, it looks to be the start of a much milder pattern across not only the Midwest, but across much of the country as Pacific air streams in across the region, and we get a break from this flow of Arctic air that has been such a prevalent feature going back all the way since now October.
Parts of Europe have suffered a really tough drought. Are they getting better?
They are improving across not only Germany, but across much of Europe, as the pattern has been quite stormy across Europe and Black Sea region. And that looks to continue as we go through the next several weeks. And so with actually much of the on the temperature side of things, temperatures being primarily above freezing in countries such as Germany and France, the precip will be primarily in the form of rain, and that will help be absorbed into the soil there to improve soil moisture conditions. So definitely an improving situation as we go through the month of December.
Okay, and finally, and can you confirm this for me, I believe that on Saturday in your area, Woodridge, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago, we will not reach the 32-degree mark. And I only ask this because the man who played Flick, Scott Schwartz, and Flick is the little boy that stuck his tongue to the metal pole, will be at the Hollywood Boulevard talking about his experience with A Christmas Story, and I bet it would be kind of fun if it was still cold on that day. Are we going to be cold enough for you to get your tongue stuck to a pole on Saturday in Chicago?
For this upcoming Saturday, Todd?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like a sub-freezing day that day. any time of day, really, and that's kind of in the core of one of those Arctic air masses. So, yeah, reliving of the of that coming up this weekend.
Thanks so much. You have a great day. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That, of course, is Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.